Howdy do, buckaroos. Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. It is Tuesday, March 5th, 2019. I am your host, Kelly Gamott. With me today, I have Brian Chaffin. Hi, Brian.
Hello. I did that one yesterday. I'm so sorry. I can't believe I did that. I did that one yesterday. Oh, anyway, yeah.
I'll come back to you. With me today, I have John Martellaro. Hi, John.
Hi, Kelly. Good morning.
I'm glad to have you here. With me today, I also have Brian Chaffin. Hi, Brian.
Oh, no, there are two of them.
I said I'd come back to him.
You did say that. Hello, Kelly. It's good to be here. Thank you for having me. It's so fun to be on the show.
Okay, standard issue Brian is just freaking me out. All right. Okay. So our first topic today, and we're headed somewhere with this, is cord cutting. And the reason we're going to talk about it is because we had a piece up this morning about an article discussing the cases against cord cutting and how wrong they are. Right, John?
Yeah, it wound me up.
Well, feel free to unwind here.
Well, it wound me up because it was a mixture of good advice and poor advice and kind of an oddly structured article that had a sort of a odd sentence or two that didn't seem to be in connection with reality in every paragraph of the article. I mean, overall, it was pretty good, and there's some good points we should address. But it also seemed also Pollyannish. It was so pie in the sky and unconnected to the realities of what the studios are after and their financial situation and what they're trying to achieve. And their we'll talk about it.
Well, talk about it. So tell me. So first of all, the thing about this article in particular is that what it says is that if you are a person who is cord cutting, here are the things that people are going to say against it, basically, right?
Right, and it's set up a kind of a straw man set of arguments. Mm-hmm. And right out of the box, the first one was kind of weird because the argument, the faux argument is, well, those streaming services really add up to money, and you're going to pay as much as you're paying now, and that's not a good argument.
Okay, why not?
Well, what Fast Company says is that you don't have to subscribe, and so they won't add up. Mm-hmm. But the reality of the situation is that the studios are very highly structured to force you into wanting what they have to they have to provide. And a good example is Disney pulling back Marvel. And so if you are a fan of a particular genre, then you will have to pay for it. Mm-hmm. It's like CBS All Access. If you're a Star Trek fan, you just also have to pay for CBS All Access if you want it right away, Star Trek Discovery. Mm-hmm. So the studios are all about advertising. They're all about creating need. They're all about Trump. They're all about rolling out their wares and making them attractive and creating need and demand. That's their financial model. Mm-hmm. And guess what? People fall for that. Mm-hmm. And people subscribe to things because they've got to have what they want, and they've got to have it now, and they got to be the first kid on the block and all that jazz. And so people are going to end up paying as much as they were before. So simply telling people, well, you don't have to have Marvel or you don't have to have Star Trek. If you want to control your costs, just don't sign up for these services. It just sounded disingenuous to me. It didn't face reality.
The thing that I see from a lot of people is I know a number of people, for example, who are Game of Thrones fans and were not subscribed, you know, only Game of Thrones fans. So they were not subscribed in January and they were probably not subscribed in February, but they might have subscribed in March to HBO Now so that they can watch the first set of episodes again, so that they can watch 1 through 7. And then when 8 comes in April, they will pay for April and they will pay for May. And then when Game of Thrones is over, they cancel.
Well, that just proves the point. People get what they want. When people want something, they're going to figure out how to get it one way or the other, and they will pay for it.
Or for people who aren't interested in that, they can buy stuff on iTunes. You know, I don't need to subscribe to CBS All Access if all I want is Discovery, for example. So I will buy those episodes on iTunes and call it good, right? There's a wide variety of people who do that kind of thing. And these are already people who are, who have shown they are willing to take action and not just let inertia go with everything, or they would just continue to pay the cable service because that's the easiest thing to do, is not change anything. So that was the first thing I didn't like about that argument. Yes, Brian. Okay,
so first of all, this piece really, really, like, I don't understand why this piece was in Fast Company. It really reads like
advertorial. Well, it's also somebody who's unfamiliar with the finances and the politics of the industry, too.
Well, I disagree with a lot of what you said, because if you part of the characterization that so like I'm complaining about the article, but now I'm also complaining about your complaint about the article.
That's why I love having you on the show, Brian.
Because
yay, I'm glad I made popcorn.
The piece reads like an advertorial for all of the other cord cutting services, but I don't think it is. And it, like I said, it's not really Fast Company material. It's a fine article. I think a lot of the arguments, like for someone who hasn't put a lot of thought into this already and has maybe encountered some of these various arguments against cord cutting, it does serve as an okay primer. But part of the whole "you don't have to get everything" point that he was making is that with a lot of cable bills at $100 a month, you've got a lot of room to subscribe to different things. Mm-hmm. And then there was another really, really good point. Like, this is the best point. The best point that the piece makes. It says that my theory, I'm quoting, my theory, all of this fretting about fragmentation, actually, this is kind of skipping.
I highlighted the same paragraph, Brian. I've got that highlighted right in front of me. That's a great paragraph.
It is a great paragraph. All this fretting about fragmentation comes from a fear of not being able to watch everything that might be of interest. But in every other medium, from music to books to video games, we've already let go of that notion. It's about time the same thing happened to TV. It's the first time I've ever thought about that. And I absolutely have that fear.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good point. The article, as I said, is a mixture of good and bad. It just seems to be kind of out of touch in some areas.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But that's a good
point.
That part is one of the things that, you know, I mean, a lot of people, like you said, you know, like video games is the example that I think of, that where like, if you want to play Halo and you can only buy one console, then you get an Xbox because you can't play Halo anywhere else. And so that influenced the decision that you made. And, you know, you still, for the most part, buy a video game and then play the video game, or, you know, buy a book. You know, you can get books from the library, but for the most part, it's, you know, I'm going to buy a book and take it home and read it, and it's going to live on the shelf and I'm going to love it and take it down and read it again, whatever. And that was one of the things about this that I thought was interesting, and is I don't know if it's fear of not being able to watch everything as much as it is like channel surfing and randomly coming across some show and then finding out that you really like it. And because that used to be one of the ways that people would find new things to watch. So, yeah, everything that might be of interest. Like,
it goes to industry manipulation, which started when DVDs came out and people wanted to have a collection of everything. And so you had this notion that I should own every Bond movie. And so you buy them all on video cassette, and guess what? Then DVDs come out. And now your video cassette collection of all the James Bond movies is no longer very interesting or valuable or useful. And so now you're faced with the prospect of collecting them all on DVD or Blu-ray or streaming. So the industry is very good at manipulating people, and that's one of the things that the author overlooks.
I can see that. So was there another argument in here that you wanted to take apart?
Yeah, the internet will fleece you anyway. I think it's number 4 or 5 or something.
Yeah.
The argument that you're going to end up paying as much down the road as you are now. Well, guess what, folks? That's the entire goal of the entertainment industry. They're not in the business of losing money. They're not in the business of charging you less. Make sure that as they transition from cable and satellite over to internet television, that the transition goes the way they want it to go, and that you will end up paying as much as you paid before, and that they will make even more money. And their growth, they will show growth and gains and success. And so it's just again, disingenuous of the author to say, well, the providers are going to fleece you anyway. Well, they are. About that's the and people will fall for it, and people will end up paying just as much.
Well, I think part of it
he's
is
he's arguing against that, John. The quote, internet providers will fleece you anyway, is the straw man that he's trying to cut down.
Yeah, and there are, well, and that's what I'm saying is that they are going to fleece you. He's saying that they're not.
I take issue with fleecing because fleecing is.
He's saying that you've got control and that you can legitimately save money.
Well, you do have control and you can legitimately save money. And part of that is because I'm only paying for HBO, for example. Let's use that since I mentioned it earlier. And when I decide I'm done with HBO, I can just cancel it. Or, you know, like, it's not really fleecing. Like, I think part of it is, you know, like if I pay for a cable package, part of what I'm paying for is, you know, a bunch of channels that show nothing but football. And I don't watch football and I don't care about football, but I can't a la carte my cable so that I only get the channels that I actually watch. And so I end up paying some amount of money for a package that includes some percentage of stuff that is channels I don't know exist and don't care if they exist because they will never be relevant to me ever, ever, ever. So I think that's part of where like the fleecing stuff comes into it, because I know what I'm getting when I pay for HBO and when I pay for Netflix and when I pay for Hulu or whatever those things are. And then if I decide I'm not getting that value out of it anymore, I can just change that. So I think for me, one of the things that is hard for cord cutters that isn't really covered here is I want to watch a movie. There's a movie and it's out. Like, I know that Black Panther is available on DVD, so I'm going to assume it's available on streaming. What service is it on? Where do I go to find that out? Like, for me, that's always been the hardest part, is because you have to go to like generally more than one website, whether it's like I'm going to look this up with Netflix or I'm going to look this up with Prime Video or I'm going to look this up with Hulu and see where those things are.
But what he's talking about, Kelly, he's talking about cost, not selection.
Right.
There's another paragraph.
But I'm not talking about selection either. Like, I know this is available.
Prices are increasing. Cable TV prices are rising even faster. That's because TV networks are constantly demanding higher carriage fees from cable and satellite providers, which in turn pass those on to customers. Well, internet services face no such external pressure.
Right.
But there are internet pricing pressures, as we've seen from Netflix having to finance competition, having to finance independent productions, having to pay increased carriage fees themselves. So there is equal price pressure. That for me either.
But I would disagree with that only because in all of the hours of Netflix that I have watched in my life, I have never gotten a banner that scrolled across the top of Netflix that said Comcast might make Netflix go away. You should call them right away and tell them to let us stay on your service.
There's another version of that. The Foyles War season 1-7, for example, is on Netflix, and you're in season 3, and then guess what? They lose their rights to it. And you turn in the next day and seasons and Foyles War is gone completely because they've terminated the contract rights. It's the same thing. It just happens in a different method.
When did you become against cord cutting, John? Like, why are you arguing for the status quo here?
Well, I'm not arguing for the status quo, and I'm not arguing against cord cutting. What I'm saying is that this article, while it has a lot of good advice, seems to be discussions and the strategy of the industry.
Right.
Makes
so what he's saying is the check cleared yesterday from Big Cable.
That they're a Pollyanna-ish and kind of fly in the face of the reality of the industry. That's all I'm saying. And while we've pointed to a couple of really great pieces of advice and some good observations, it's also a mixture of disconnectedness from reality.
I have a semi-related question for you, John.
Here it comes. Big popcorn, Kelly.
The semi-related question for you, John, is can you please update our listeners on the status of those darn kids on your lawn? Because I think everybody wants to know.
I'm desperate to find out. We're waiting.
I'm not even going to respond.
John.
I'm not even going to respond.
That is the best response, John. Salute, sir. Salute.
That was good. Okay.
Your thank you is dead air.
Oh, that was fun. All right. Well, as we hear more about this, because obviously cord cutting is still a thing that's happening. A lot of people are doing it. People are finding better ways to do it all the time. As we find out more about that and the situation continues to evolve, you will hear more about it here. In the meantime, I would like to talk to you about our sponsor today. And our sponsor is Keeps. And Keeps is the easiest, most affordable way to keep the hair that you have. 2 out of 3 men will experience hair loss by the time they're 35. And these are FDA-approved products that used to cost a lot. But thanks to Keeps, they're now inexpensive and easy to get. For 5 minutes and as little as $10 a month, you never have to worry about hair loss again. So getting started is really easy. You sign up, you answer some questions, and you take some photos of your hair. A licensed physician reviews that information online and recommends the right treatment for you, and then it gets shipped to you directly every 3 months. So Keeps offers generic versions of the only 2 FDA-approved hair loss products out there. Some people have probably tried them before, but you've never gotten them for this price. So Keeps is between like $10 a month and $35 a month. Plus now, you can get your first month free. And the way you do that is to go to keeps.com/TDO. That's keeps.com/TDO. And that will get you 1 month of treatment for free. Now, our second topic today starts with some comments that Tim Cook made at the shareholders meeting. And Brian, you covered the shareholders meeting for us, so I'd like to have you talk us through this.
So there was the shareholder meetings seldom, only occasionally, is how I put it, really have anything all that newsworthy. Mm-hmm. Come up. And in this particular case, there were two things. One is that Tim Cook allowed Craig Federighi to say that an unannounced feature was coming. So in other words, announce a feature. And that just never, ever happens. Like specifically, Tim Cook never even entertains those questions when someone asks about something. Mm-hmm. And the way it often gets asked is exactly the way this fellow asked it, which was, you know, I'm interested in the new iPad Pro, but I've got a concern about being able to do video out over USB-C. So, you know, are you going to fix that? And there was a little mm-hmm. back and forth quipping between the two of them. Was actually quite funny. And then Tim Cook had Craig Federighi actually answer the question, and Craig said, "Do I have permission to, you know, pre-announce this?" And yeah. Tim thought about it for a half second and said, "Sure." And Craig said, "Yeah, well, you know, we've got something on the way for that."
Cool.
Yeah, so that was strange. Like that's never yeah. happened in all. I think I've missed 3 shareholder meetings in the last 15 years or so, and mm-hmm. that just never happens. So, and then the other thing was that politics reared its ugly head again in this one. And that's happened a couple of times. It's actually happened a few times, I suppose. So, the thing that I think you're really asking me about is Tim and politics, where he made the case that he's going to work with anybody. Mm-hmm. And what he specifically made the case about is saying that, all right, let me actually quote him here. He said that,
while you look that up, I just want to tell you that my favorite in reading this was, I was reading this article that you put together, and I just like that you have a subhead of Shelton Ehrlich rides again.
Mr. Ehrlich, to his credit, has reached out to me and wants to get together.
Hey!
Yeah. So, kudos to him for being willing and interested in doing so.
It's possible he listened to Tim Cook say what Tim Cook said.
Yeah, I don't think so, but we'll find out. we'll find out. So Tim said, unfortunately, too often people are identified in those respective camps, referring to the polarized world. So we live in a very polarized world today. And unfortunately, too often people are identified in those respective camps, and the dialogue that should take place to find that 99 or the 95% commonality or areas of interest doesn't happen. Mm-hmm. I don't believe in that polarized world, he said. I think it's bad. I think it's something I would love to help blow up. I think it's not good for any of us. And by when he says, so that's the end of the quote. When he says, I don't believe in that polarized world, what he means is I'm not buying into it, and I'm not willing or interested in perpetuating it. Mm-hmm. He said, what we do, I'm quoting again, what we do with people in all political parties, I'm a big believer in engagement. You can imagine if you're a gay man from the South, you don't exactly ask everybody what you whether you agree with that lifestyle, or you don't have a lot of friends. So I don't check people at the doors as to who they are and what they believe. I care about skills and capabilities and contributions. I think that for us, we focus on policy things. I find that we sometimes are more in the thinking of one group and sometimes in another. And sometimes all groups don't like us, and sometimes everybody can agree. And then he laid out the things that Apple is. Mm-hmm. He said that we are pro-environment, pro-immigration. We do believe in diversity in a strong way, in a broad way. We're capitalists. Mm-hmm. We believe in privacy. We're strong believers in privacy, and privacy has its fans from all walks of life and its detractors in all walks of life. Walks of life. Mm-hmm. Singular life. So anyway, that and I know that springboards into something that that John was thinking or seeing.
But what I liked about this was the, I don't know if it's necessarily a clarification because it never really seemed like it was political at Apple anyway, but talking about it being policy, and that was the thing that I thought was interesting, because these are not political things, they're policies. Yeah.
I like that.
Yeah, because it's not about...
The last two paragraphs are very fascinating. It says, we don't look at the politics of it, we think about the policy of it. Mm-hmm. And I recognize in a polarized world, many people don't see that. They see policy and then try to assign it to a particular group. I thought that was very insightful. Mm-hmm. And I appreciate Tim Cook's rationality and technical accuracy and clarity of thinking and shrewdness of politics and in that kind of thinking. I really appreciate that. And it came to a head in an article that Charlotte pointed out, and that had to do with Tim Cook's involvement in the U.S.-China trade and relationship with the White House, and Tim Cook's steady, even-handed, intelligent steering of the company and being an intermediary between the two nations and looking out for the best interest of his company and not being petty. And I think that's just another example of Tim Cook's leadership and intelligence in this situation.
Yeah. The thing that I thought was interesting about all of this was how he talked about none of it being political, and they don't look at any of that as political or as on one side or the other of some particular debate. Like, we think this is the right thing to do, so that's what we're doing, whether it's, you know, pro-environment or pro-immigration or pro-diversity. Like, it's these are the things that they think are a good idea, and it's not because they are people who lean a particular direction or are part of a specific political party or anything like that. And it was like, that's not the thing that's motivating them. And the thing that I thought was most interesting about that quote about who Apple is the bit in the middle where he says, you know, we're pro-environment, we're pro-immigration. We're capitalists, because I think sometimes that gets lost when people are talking about the rest, you know, other pieces of Apple policy is they're doing this to make money. And it just so happens that one of the ways they do that is that they can go about it in a different way than other people, than other companies are. And I think that that's
capitalists who are making a lot of money, who are yet nevertheless green, not contaminating the environment very much, generating their own energy. Mm-hmm. Gee, if they can do it, that's why can't others? It's a great leadership role too.
Right. And, but it was interesting to see that right in the middle of that, you know, make no mistake, we are capitalists. Like, I thought that was an interesting facet to put on the alongside all of those other facets of what he's describing as Apple. So I thought that was pretty interesting.
I think in the context of what he's saying there, that we are capitalists, is we don't let politics and agenda drive our business into ruin.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think it's a little deeper than that. I think a lot of people, especially on the conservative side, look at Apple and see a liberal company, quote unquote. But Apple very aggressively pursues taxation incentives, mm-hmm. Tax breaks to do business. And Apple has aggressively lobbied for reduced corporate taxes. And these are, generally speaking, issues that are more embraced on the conservative side. And I think that's actually what he was talking about when he was talking about being capitalists, is that they Apple believes in making a profit. And Apple believes in and companies paying less taxes.
Mm-hmm.
And those are both very capitalist things.
Yeah, I agree with that completely. I think, but it was, as a statement, it was an interesting statement, because we don't always get a lot of opportunity to hear Tim Cook talk about, like, Apple is a company and this is who we are and this is the kind of identity that we have. And so to have him sort of come out and lay it out very clearly like that was something that we don't see as often.
But it was the perfect platform.
Absolutely. Those are the people who need to know. That was what made it an interesting conversation, was that these are the people that I'm talking to. You know, like, these are the people who have the most, an actual vested interest in, so to speak, in what the company is and what it does and what direction it's going. And I, you know, and we've seen before where he has said things like, if this is what you want from Apple, then you shouldn't be investing in Apple, because, like, we're never going to do that. I don't remember what the exact... Brian, you might know that one, but
talking, I do. He was specifically talking about the environment, and he was saying that we believe in the environment and being green. And if you don't want to be investing in a company that believes in these things, don't invest in us.
Yeah, that to me was really interesting to see as a statement. You know, like, we're an environmental company, so if you are going to, you know, so if that's not what you're into, then don't invest in us. Because what that says to me is, it's a thing that we're doing. We're going to continue to take action on that front, and it's not going to change.
Yeah. And also, we're making a lot of money, even though we're doing this. So,
yes,
like, you know, get off our lawn.
Basically, But to me, that piece in particular was interesting. You know, this is what we're doing, and if you don't like it, then you know, get used to it, I guess.
I think that sentence of Tim Cook's going to drive a lot of my thinking going forward. They see a policy and then assign it to a particular group. I wonder how many times that has happened, and I wonder why it happens, and I think it's going to keep on happening.
Well, and I think that that's a thing that happens everywhere. I don't think that's limited to Apple or even tech or...
No,
you know.
I'm not saying that. Yeah. I'm just saying it's a part of the human psychological way of thinking.
Right. So, you know, I agree. So clearly this is something that my associates think is true. And then I disagree. So obviously it's what the other guy thinks is true. And it was an interesting approach. So, yeah. Anyway. Thanks for the discussion. As we hear more about Apple and China and Tim Cook saying anything interesting at shareholder meetings, I'm sure Brian will tell us all about that.
Indeed.
All right. Thanks for coming by today, Brian.
Thanks for having me.
Much better. All right. And John Martellaro, thanks for coming by today.
Yeah, thanks for having me as well.
And I've been your host, Kelly Gamont. I will talk to all of you tomorrow. In the meantime, be excellent to each other.